It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
And believe me, you don't have to tell me that the stock market is in the crapper. And for anybody who's heavily invested in the stock market, probably not as diversified as I should be. This is making me pucker in places that I don't feel like puckering, you know? And I'm not going to get any more graphic than that, my brothers and sisters. Listen, I'm going to break my own rule here. I never have a guest out of the blocks. Never, ever, 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 never will I do that, because I always want to tell you what's going on throughout the day, set the whole thing up, which I will do, but I ain't doing it right now because I need to talk to this man that I asked him, you know, can you come on with me today? And the only time he's able to do it is right now while he's traveling, and that is my dear friend of many years and the economist, Dr. Joseph Pinbera, who joins us right out of the blocks on the Ray Appleton program. Joe, I appreciate you doing this. Good morning. I know you're on the run today, but I you know, when I heard the Dow was down 1,000 points, I thought of one name, and that was you. What's going on? What's happening here, sir?
You know, Ray, it's sort of a perfect storm now. We have the sanctions that the EU is proposing, which will obviously reduce the growth of Europe. You have the April 26th shutdown of Shanghai because of COVID. You have the seemingly intransigence of the Biden administration to do anything about producing energy. You have a number of people that are looking at technicals in the market, and we're very dangerously close to a tipping point in those. I mean, within a few points in the S&P and in the ETF SPY, which is the S&P 500. So. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things happening. And then on top of that, yesterday, you had Powell said, well, we're not going to do a 0.75 interest rate increase. We're going to only do a 0.5, which it sent the market up because there were people thinking, well, it's going to be bigger. It could be as high as 1% because some of these countries have engaged in increases of at least 1%. And he held it at 0.5, and everybody got a kind of a sigh of relief. But then when they looked at what else they were doing, which is what they were cutting back on credit supply, which has really been keeping this economy going, all of the folks that do the trading here are thinking, okay, well, wait a minute, if they're no longer putting money into the system and they're actually taking it back, that was really the last prop on recession. Would be our credit spreads are still pretty good, availability of money is pretty good, so we have that going. And then of course we have inflation with high prices just, you know, roiling American families. You have the president talking about the pain it's going to cause and, you know, that sort of stuff. And so the psychology is really pretty negative. We're at a real major inflection point. And then when you look at EU, the EU, all these sanctions on Russia that they're trying to do are being undermined by China and India. China and India are buying Russian oil at $70 a barrel, where the world market is at about 100, 108 a barrel. So who knows what any of these sanctions against Putin in Ukraine are really going to occur, and what that long-term pressure point is for him. It keeps being moved back and back and back. And I frankly don't even see how they're going to take a vote on May the 9th, which I believe is next Monday, right? Next Monday they're going to take a vote. They need all 27 members to vote this, and you're going to see Hungary, I can't possibly believe, is going to agree, and Slovakia and Greece and those countries as well.
Well, they've asked for exceptions to this whole thing, both Hungary and Slovakia. So whether they're going to get that, God only knows.
If it goes against the EU rules, but, you know, to see the Germans and the French and the British get together, you know, some of these sanctions are really going to be very troubling for somebody like Germany. I mean, 27% of the oil from in Europe, in the EU, comes from Russia, about 40% of the gas. And when you think about it, almost 100% of the insurance on tankers comes from London insurers. That's how London makes its money, is through international financing of insurance projects and programs. So when you think about this, even if they send the oil out, if there's an oil spill, these countries that are accepting the oil are going to have to accept the liabilities for this. And there's nothing that to me says that India or China are going to back these sanctions, which is a shame, because I think India in particular should be backing it. And
absolutely.
So there's a whole lot of chaos. There's a whole lot of chaos going on in the markets right now. But if we don't, if we drop below today's low in the S&P, then we get the next low is the real really bad one, about 3,900 in the S&P, which is another 200, about 200 points. Then we're going to be we're going to be in a lot of trouble in terms of the market recovering any degree of confidence.
You know, the R word is beginning to, you know, raise its ugly head on this whole thing. Recession, recession, recession. Your feelings about that? I get the impression we're close.
Well, you know, it's funny. Well, not funny. It's confounding, really, to both the Fed and the equity markets, because when you look at the economic models they use, a recession would have to have slowing economic growth, which we do have, high energy costs, which we do have, rising prices, which we do have, but we also should have declining labor demand, and that doesn't exist because we actually have job openings increasing. We have constrained credit. We don't have constrained credit yet, and we don't have exhausted demand. And frankly, we have very high demand coming through still. So at least three of the six props in a recession are not there, but we have some props towards stagflation, which is the same, you know, it has the same thing, slowing economic growth, higher energy, higher inflation, higher prices. But we have, but again, we don't have constrained credit. So what I think is roiling the markets is that subtext, which people read, didn't read, in which the, which Powell announced a major reduction in credit and money supply. And that really has a lot of people bothered because, you know, the whole country has been feeding off these paycheck support and, you know, the money going from the Treasury to states and to local governments and, you know, putting money into infrastructure and that sort of stuff. And when you start slowing that down, it really does change the entire narrative. So we're really, really close to tipping over here.
The issue with the EU, getting back to that, trying to cut the cord on Russian energy, I thought in the beginning that was a very brave thing for them to do. It's going to be very hard on them. I don't know how the hell they're going to be able to backfill that since we're not a net exporter anymore. And then when you told the story about China and India buying at $70 a gallon, a barrel, excuse me, and India, I mean, what a letdown. That is, considering the relationship that we've had with them. What is their response to this? Why? Obviously, we must have come to India and said, what the hell are you doing here? And they've said what, to your knowledge, if anything?
Well, you know, everybody's the time for the miracles to happen in China, well past. Now you have the Indian miracle, which is a growing economy. But what they're really saying, too, though, when you think about it, and they're somewhat right, they're saying a pox on Europe. You guys have done nothing really to produce any kind of oil since 2000. Mm-hmm. You folks in the United States were net oil exporters up until the end of the Trump administration. And then the last year and a half, you've depleted your reserves and you've cut off oil production in the United States. So pox on your house, too. You guys went from, you know, producing a lot of the world's oil, actually producing more oil than we needed, to now a net importer. So why should we think that you're going to do anything to improve your own house, and so we're going to take care of our own? And that's really what they're doing. And with respect to China, China's in a lot of trouble for a lot of different reasons now, and a lot of it has to do with a lack of transparency. You can see what happened to the DD stock. So they're now in the middle of something where they have to, you know, they've had a lot of failures in the residential and the commercial property area, the Evergrande being one of the most prominent. So they're looking for ways to cut their costs, and obviously they're doing it by buying this cheap oil. And then Russia, really at this particular point, I only think that what's going to really hurt Russia is if we take off all of their credit supply from the Russian Ag Bank, the Credit Bank of Moscow, Sberbank. If we can get people to stop using that system, then China's not going to have anywhere to pay them. Mm-hmm. Because where's China going to make the deposits? So I think India's going to have to step back a minute and say, well, wait a minute, you know, we can't even pay these folks, and they're not going to take our currency. So what's going to happen to our currency? That's the only thing that I think could possibly hurt Putin at this point. But I think Putin's going to say, well, wait a minute, look what the U.S. did with respect to the Iranian sanctions. We put them on, we then took them off, and they're now backing terrorists again,
right?
Because the Biden administration had to go to some place to buy oil, and it went to Iraq and Iran now again. So we don't have a plan in the United States for a transit. Yes, I agree that the getting off oil has to happen, but you have to do it in an orderly transition. You don't tell the American public, you know, and households, you know, that, you know, yeah, you guys are going to have to deal with more pain, is what the president said, in
chaos.
Terms of food and oil and housing. You don't do that in a unplanned transition.
No.
Where you just cater to a platform of people who don't understand that transition has to be orderly.
Dr. Pinbara, let me take a very quick break and we'll come right back to you. We'll finish up at the bottom of the hour. I so appreciate this. Out of the blocks today, Dr. Joseph Pinbara is joining us on the stock market, the overall economic situation with you know, Ukraine and Russia, the EU, you know, possibly ending their relationship with, you know, Russian energy and what that's going to mean to us in the long run. Things are a flat mess. If you have any quick questions, do it. 490-5858, but do it now. 800-776-5858. State of California, online all over the country. Hit the phones if you must and you will, and we'll cover you next with more from Dr. Pinbara on KMJ.
Miss the show?
Get Ray Appleton. Subscribe to the Ray Appleton Podcast right now. It's free.
Economist Dr. Joseph Pinbara joining us very early out of the blocks today on the Appleton program, talking about the current state of the market, you know, and what's going on with Russia and Ukraine and its effect upon us. Phone calls. Anthony, you're on the air with Dr. Pinbara. Go for it. Hi.
Hey, Ray. Anthony, Ohio here.
Yeah.
I have a question with the freight market being, I mean, right now loads into California are paying like $1.67 a mile. And with diesel fuel prices at an all-time high, is this war in Ukraine affecting our freight prices?
Hmm.
Diesel prices are going to continue to go through the roof. This is probably the most damaging part of this whole sanction issue, is that diesel prices are heading much higher.
That probably doesn't help you at all, does it, Anthony? Not a bit with what you're doing, man. Thank you. You know, in the short term, Dr. Pinbara, what should we be doing as a country? What should the administration be doing? Is there anything that can be done to offset some of this damage that's going to be affecting all of us? It's kind of an ambiguous, broad question, but you tell me.
No, that, you know, that's a really good question, because, you know, psychology drives the markets, and at some point the situation will stabilize, and then you'll see opportunities for investing and growth and so on. But what bothers me the most about this is you really can't find, in the last few years, any electronic media source that isn't driven by the belief that America is in decline, that we have to, you know, destroy the whole culture and tear it down in order to build it up. You know, people are just wondering, Americans are saying, and I'm going to say this because there's a context for what the world is looking at. Americans themselves are asking things like, you know, the things we took for granted, like having abundant water and cheap energy and relatively cheap food and respect for the rule of law. They're now such problems. Well, the rest of the world is saying, well, if America believes it's in decline, who's going to step up in this? And who's going to deal with the China buildup militarily and Iran and now Russia? And how are we going to stop other people from circumventing these sanctions? And what bothers me about this is that in the past, America has been so much stronger. It is the greatest country in the world, in my estimation, for a lot of different reasons. But now we have all this internal strife driving it. And it seems like the president and the Congress have taken their eye off the ball, completely taken their eye off the ball. I mean, you find more stories about Amber Heard and Johnny Depp than you do about what's actually going on in the economy and what's happening in our political system. And again, the media seems to be driving a lot of this. And now people are saying, well, wait a minute, nobody's in charge. There's nobody in charge. And that's really what is hurting this the most. I mean, I've been watching shows about the First Lady and about Roosevelt and Gerald Ford and so on. And you see, you know, true American leaders. And here we don't have anybody that's really stepped up. And that's really what's hurting us right now, is we don't have a program for energy development. We just don't have a program. So what's going to change without a program? I have no concept of how they're going to deal with that. And if you look at the projections for oil that the EIA just produced, the Energy Information Administration, they range from $40 a barrel to $200 a barrel over the next 2 years. That's quite a spread. So that tells me that even the government doesn't know where this is going.
You know, the blame game is about the only thing this administration is capable of. When I heard Biden last night saying Republicans have no concept of inflation, I just about, you know, tore my television off the wall and threw it in the front yard. That just doesn't do us any good playing that game. And I think going back to one of the statements you made, that the whole wheels began to fall off the cart nationally when Biden canceled the Keystone. And, you know, we go back to this point of how are we ever going to produce again? Will we get to that point mentally? Can we do it? How optimistic are you, Joe, that someday we will get back to that and we'll start natural gas, you know, oil? Our crude is much cleaner, nicer than the Russian stuff that's on the market. It's something that I think ultimately we're going to have to do, but when?
Well, you know, Ray, the situation is actually a lot worse in that respect because we have this thing called the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Right, right.
And
I was going to bring that up.
I just sent you the numbers so you could see, you know, what I've been warning people about. And I'm going to do this in speeches over the next 3 or 4 weeks. That's why I sent you the analysis. Well, we have now a drawdown of 1 million barrels per month, according to the president. He just stated that a few weeks ago. So that means that we're going to be, 1 million barrels a day. So that means we're going to take 180 million barrels from March of this year to October balance. Well, we have a U.S. Rule that we have to have 90 days of supply and reserve. That's 351 million barrels. As of October, we'll only have 325 or so million barrels in our reserve. So we're actually running a deficit. And all of these things that are being done are really to backstop a political platform that, again, has no plan. So when you look at what's happening, assuming that he's right and he's going to keep putting this 180 million barrels out there, we have actually had a drawdown this year alone of 51.2% of our reserve. Where are we going to get that? Well, Canada is probably going to produce more, ironically, because that's probably where the Keystone would have been.
Right.
You're going to have to rely on Saudi Arabia. You take out Russia's, 8 to 13%, depending upon who you're talking to. It's going to mean that you're going to have to go to Iran and Iraq. OPEC is not the same as the Persian Gulf group, but you do have in that OPEC group, Venezuela and, other countries that just hate our guts. So you're now going to have much more dependence on foreign oil. And if you don't have that, you're going to continue to drive prices up. So again, oil and energy, if we had done one thing in this country in the last 30 years, if we made energy cheap and really were capable of doing that, made energy cheap, this country would be an economic miracle in to itself. Because if you think about how much energy drives other prices and flows through the economy, and even in California, if we were to make energy cheap in California rather than having these incredibly badly managed energy companies like PG&E involved, if we had done that in California, we could accommodate a great many of the infrastructure and social programs. But what we've done is made it almost impossible for us in California not to have to buy oil from other states now, because our electric grid system is going to be powered by oil for a period of time. So we're producing all these electronic vehicles and charging stations. Well, where is the energy for those charging stations going to come from?
Right.
It's not going to come from California. So if you look at that, it's been a problem now for well over a decade. We've had, these drawdowns since 2010. And yet, I looked at what did they use the drawdown of our oil supply to do? What they did is, they took it and they applied it to the budget deficit. So we sold off our oil reserve. We didn't stop producing. And we, to mask the true growing budget deficit, because we keep spending, they took the sale of the oil and they put it against the budget deficit, which is kind of a false thing when you think about how that reserve should have been used. It should have been used to provide a transition to a more climate-friendly energy development program, but we had none of that. We had a very knee-jerk reaction by the new president, that just shut down everything. And it amazes me how little the media really has its eye on the ball when it comes to this sort of thing.
Dr. Panbara, I got to cut you loose. I thank you much for your time today. And, stay safe. Let us know from time to time where the hell we're going or not going. And we'll all say a big prayer and catch our breath, and hopefully we can get through this. But thank you again for joining us.
Sure, anytime. And Brad, sorry I don't have more time today.
That's
but
all right.
Happy to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thank you again, sir. Bye-bye. Take care. All right, there it is. Dr. Joseph Panbara right out of the blocks today. We do have a guest coming up out of the news. Somebody I've known for a while. John Duarte. And I know him from the Ag Show, and he's got this hybrid tree and that one, and now he wants to move his act to Washington and be a congressman. John, what are you thinking, dude?
This is the Ray Appleton Show on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Click the podcast page at KMJNow.com.
Ladies and gentle people, somebody I've known for a while, I mean, all, you know, ag-related prior to this little encounter today, and we'd pick him up every year as a sponsor of the program out at the Ag Show in Tulare, and now he wants to change hats a little bit. I can dig that. You know, it's John Duarte. And John, how you been, and what in the hell are you up to now? Why are you doing this? Jeez.
Hey, Ray, thanks for having me on today. It's great to be part of your show. I'm running for Congress in the California 13th Congressional District.
Why?
I'm a farmer and a businessman.
Go on.
We've got to turn this around. I mean, you document it every day on your show what the federal government is doing to this valley. They're taking the water off our farms. They're raising the high cost of living for our people in the communities out here. The border is wide open and uncontrolled. And every solution offered by Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden is off the mark and usually fairly zany. I mean, when you need to drill more oil, drill more oil. Don't start spending out the petroleum reserve. I mean, you just talked about that a few minutes ago. It's they can't get one thing right. And we've got to take back Congress. And this is a seat that we need to take if we're going to take back Congress. This is one of those difficult seats that if we pick it up, we'll get Nancy Pelosi back in the cheap seats. We'll get Kevin McCarthy a speaker, and we'll start solving problems in the valley in a real way.
Why is it a difficult seat to pick up? You tell us your words.
Sure. It went for Joe Biden over Donald Trump by Democrat plus 10 in the last election. But it's also a seat we can pick up, because it voted to recall Gavin Newsom by 1.5% in the recall election.
All right.
So this is it's like David Valadao has been running down there in his seat. It's just a swing seat. It's a majority maker seat that we need to win. The Republican Party has targeted it. I've got Kevin McCarthy's endorsement. He's elevated my campaign to the young gun status, which is the highest level of engagement the national party gives hopeful candidacies.
That's a big
in
deal.
Swing districts.
Yeah, it's a pretty big
and
deal.
Last Thursday, his leadership fund committed $1.6 million in a media buy for this race. So the game is up.
Wow. I'm kind of stunned by that. All right, that's fine. Geographically.
Yeah, we are going to send a farmer to Congress.
Well, we need to. We need to send a lot of them. Geographically, describe where this district is, if you would, John.
Sure. It covers five counties along Highway 5, north to south. It starts up in Lathrop, gets a little Mickey Mouse here around the River Islands development in Lathrop, picks up some rural San Joaquin County areas around Tracy and Lathrop there, some farmland. Then it picks up all of West Modesto, western Stanislaus County, Patterson, Newman. It picks up some little inclusions of Modesto, Empire, Keys, all of Ceres, bits of Turlock, and then it goes down 99, grabs all of Merced County, lock, stock, and barrel. Goes down 99 further, grabs Chowchilla and Madera along the 99 corridor, and then takes all of Madera County that is west of 99. Then it goes down into Fresno County, and it kind of bounces back and forth between 145 and 41. It picks up Kerman, Carruthers, Riverdale, Coalinga, Huron, and, Harris Ranch, the big facility there. We had a grazer there last week, is in the district, and then it stops at the Kern County border. So Kettleman City is outside the district. So this is a big rural district. This is farmlands. This is working people cities. It's small towns. I love it because this is where you drive around and you see the Duarte nursery cartons all over the place.
Yeah.
This is where we built Duarte Nursery. These are the people that built Duarte Nursery for me as customers and people who worked for us over the years. We're a job creator in this community. When I got in the race, we pulled it. And before I'd hung a sign or run a radio ad like we're doing on KMJ right now, I had 18% support in this district for my candidacy before I was a candidate. So it's a very, very good race for John Duarte. And it's a very, very good race for the Republicans to pick up a seat right now as we see the high cost of living just getting out of control for working families. We should be thriving in our agricultural community, but, you know, one unwise water decision after another over the past decades has left our farm communities kind of on their heels when we should be, yeah, we're going through a drought, but we should be thriving right now regardless of that, and we're not.
Okay, let me ask you, I should know the history of this district. I do not. Obviously, this has been reapportioned like every other district in the state of California, I would assume. Is this a new district? Is it an existing district? If so, are you fighting an incumbent? Just give me the general background of the politics of
sure.
the district.
Well, this is a brand new district, and it's a radically different district than anything. It's got pieces of David Valadao's old district. It's got part of Jim Costa's old district. It's got part of Jeff Denham's old district. It even has some tiny areas of Jerry McNerney's old district. So it actually covers pieces of four different districts. It goes north to south.
Yeah.
And it's California 13. It's got no incumbent. Josh Harder didn't like this district, so he went up north and bumped Jerry McNerney out of the 9th district. So he'll be running against Tom Patti, a very good man up there, who's running, Tom Patti running for Congress up there. And so this district's an open seat. My opponent's going to be a career politician, a guy who's been in the assembly for some time, Adam Gray.
Yeah.
Gas tax Adam Gray, I call him. He voted to increase the gas tax when it was time to give us some relief on the gas tax. He didn't even show up for the vote. He didn't vote yes. He didn't vote no. He just hid somewhere and didn't even show up to undo his very bad gas tax vote when we needed that relief. So I'm looking forward to running against Adam Gray, a Democrat career politician. He's a guy who's going to put Nancy Pelosi back in the speakership one more time. I'm going to take Nancy Pelosi out of the speakership and move forward with a pro-jobs, lower the cost of living, pro-energy, pro-farms, pro-water agenda on the Republican side.
Let's say that you're elected, John, okay? The first thing that you want to put your hands on, that you want to put a group together of people to do and fight for and, you know, what would that be? I mean, we haven't discussed specifically water yet for the state of California, which is somebody in a congressional area. I mean, that's, you've got things beyond water to worry about, but as a farmer, I know. But what would your priorities be? Day one, priorities.
Day one is water. We have to get water into this community. We can't earn wages. We can't save our farms. I am not at all about retiring farm ground. That is not an acceptable answer. We have the natural resources in this state. We have the greatest watershed in the world in the Sierra Nevada, sitting off the Pacific Ocean, above the greatest, most fertile valley in the world. It is anti-human to think that we're going to do anything but thrive and farm this valley and provide the water we need to farm this valley to supply the world with food. If we don't farm this valley, it's the low-income people in this world, the working families in the valley, the working families globally, who don't have as great a dinner plate as they can have. So water is the highest moral obligation that I see going into this thing. We've got to irrigate our farms, and we've got to feed the world from right here in the Central Valley.
All right, John,
get behind that. It's
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No,
sorry,
no,
right?
You go ahead. Go ahead, no? Please. Shoot.
Well,
behind that.
Right
what?
Behind that. We've got oil. We've got so much oil in California, so we need a national energy security policy, and we need a national food security policy. We can't let California become a dependency state for food and energy when it should be one of our strongest contributors to food and energy security here in the U.S. And we can see right now with what's going on in Russia and geopolitically all over the world, if we don't have food and energy security, we're not going to be able to provide the leadership we have provided for freedom around the globe. So this California nonsense has to be set aside.
Break time.
We've got to redirect this.
We'll continue with John Duarte. Running for the 13th District Congress, House of Representatives, State of California. He's a farmer, know him well. He's going to do a good job. I do believe that. Your comments, questions, lay them on me. We only have a few more minutes with the candidate. 490-5858 and toll-free, 800-776-5858. And more with you and me and him right after we make this money.
is the Ray Appleton Show.
Get Ray Appleton.
KMJNow.com.
Click the podcast page.
We are talking with congressional candidate, District 13, State of California, John Duarte, farmer extraordinaire, and we have phone calls for the gentleman. Barbara, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Hi.
Hi, Ray. Hey, John. It's great to hear you on the radio. Thank you so much. And thank you for stepping up to the plate. I have two comments. First, I'd like to know what expertise you will be bringing with you to this office. And I want to let your viewers know that they can meet John in Vernalis on Monday night at the Bajetti Barn.
Get that plug in there. All right.
Fantastic.
He has no expertise. That's why he's running. He's going to learn by doing. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Go ahead, John.
No, fair question. You know, 33 years as a farmer and a businessman here in the San Joaquin Valley. I was born here in Modesto. I'm a fifth generation farmer on one wing of my family, third generation on the most recent. And I'm taking a finance degree, MBA, all kinds of education, but that doesn't really matter. What matters is
Let me tell you what matters. You said something that matters, and I want to point it out. You said 33 years as a businessman. That matters. I mean, that's the kicker right there that needs to be underscored in your campaign. So continue. I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's the biggie. Go ahead.
No, that's the big one, Ray. And 33 years experience, and this is what the lower house is for. It's for people who work in their communities, build their reputations, and whatever their job is, whatever their work is, and go to Congress to represent their community as somebody who's achieved their primary achievements in their community, not as a professional politician, not as a career politician, but as a businessman, a farmer, a school teacher, you know, a lawyer, a doctor, whatever, but somebody who's actually built their acumen working in their community by the same rules that everybody else has to live by, not by the special rules that professional politicians get to live by. I've fought for water. I've fought to farm my own land. You've had me on here several times talking about the Army Corps of Engineers and that fiasco I went through a few years ago. I've been standing up and fighting for this community, making payroll, signing both sides of checks for many, many years. And I'm ready to take the fight to Washington, D.C. to represent the valley where I've built my business in and where I have built all of my professional experience working here. So
I love it.
That's how I frame it. Thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. Let me ask some of the technical questions. How are you doing on money? It's going to take a lot of money to pull this off. You know that.
We've done well. We've done really well out of the chute. Didn't launch the campaign until early March, so I got in late. We've raised over $400,000 directly. I need more money, Ray. If I could put a pitch out there, if you're a farmer, if you're a businessman, if you're an active Republican and you can go on JohnDuartyForCongress.com and make a contribution, or come to Duarte Nursery Friends Day tomorrow, May 6th, at Duarte Nursery in Houston, California, and meet me. We'll have a campaign booth. I'll be the Friends Day speaker tomorrow at Friends Day. KMJ has always been a big supporter and co-sponsor of Friends Day. And so I'll be there tomorrow at Duarte Nursery as the lunchtime political speaker at Friends Day, this time doing my own event for myself, and meet me there and see the business we've built over the last 33 years, see Duarte Nursery, see what, you know, that represents the experience of who the community can send to Congress to represent the community. Someone who's invested over $100 million in greenhouses and laboratories and production buildings, warehouses, equipment. This is my commitment to the Valley. I'm doing this for the Valley. And Friends Day is a great place to see the manifestation of my experience working here in the Valley.
Running out of time. Let me have your website address, please. I'm sure you got one.
JohnDuarteForCongress.com.
One more time.
John Duarte, D-U-A-R-T-E, JohnDuarteForCongress.com.
Okay. I got 30 seconds. Anything else you'd like to add very quickly, John?
Ray, thank you so much what you do at KMJ, bringing the local discussion here to the Valley and letting me come on here and offer myself to serve this great Valley and all of the small towns and farms and working families that need a real advocate in Washington, D.C. That's why I'm stepping up. that's why KMJ is the perfect venue for me to make my pitch today.
All right, man. Good luck to you. I think you do well. I think you kick some ass if you make it. So, I good luck to you, my friend. We'll talk down the road. We always do. So we'll speak to you the next time, okay?
Thank you, Ray. Take care.
Bye-bye. God bless. John Duarte, been involved with us in farming and forever, almost as long as I've been doing his show. I've been at it a little longer than he's been, the 33 years in business. I got 1 year on him here. And he wants to roll to Congress. Tonight is the night of my dear friend and former art teachers. Remember Mac Meacham from last week? The one that wrote in my yearbook in 1968, Good Luck in Radio and TV? He's a phenomenal artist. I have loved his work for decades. Mac is having a show tonight. And he's a neat guy. He's so different. I just want people to meet him. I think he's a cherished local asset. It's from 5 to 8. It's at 701 L Street. It's right by, connected to Bitwise or close to Bitwise. 5 to 8 o'clock tonight. It's an early one. 701 L Street. And there's a particular gallery there that is for local artists. And he's having this show. And he does everything, but his political caricatures, the stuff I like, it's pretty dark. People either love it or they hate it. This is the stuff you have to see. And I was floored the other day when he was in, and I asked him, how's it been making a living on those particular paintings? He's never sold one of them, of the political stuff. They sit in his garage. I'm like, get out of here. So I may be buying the first one in creation tonight if he'll let me, because I adore. There's one I'm after. It's a thing he did of Keith Richard and Mick Jagger and Muddy Waters, and I it's so freaking cool, and it looks so good in my music room. Not that I have any more walls left in my house. You ever been to my house? I mean, it's just I don't have anywhere to hang anything else. It's ridiculous, but I still keep collecting and collecting. But tonight I'll see you there. I'm so going. 701 L Street, downtown, and Mac Meacham, his art show. Mac is 83 now, and I thought he was just a few years older than me, because I thought we were even close, even though he was an instructor of mine in high school. I thought he just got done a little early, and he's a little bit older, and he still paints. And the stuff, I mean, he does, there's a very straight side of him that does portraits. His self-portraits are unbelievable. But it's me, it's the political stuff, the caricatures, as he calls it, that I think it's social statements deluxe. I love it. And I've just wanted people forever to see this man's artwork. And we can do that tonight at 701 L Street, downtown Fresno. I'm going. I'm taking a bunch of people with me. Gee, they're all law related. Who could that be? One of them is a very profound painter himself. Right, Judge? So anyway, I want to see everybody there tonight. I do. Okay? Now, coming up, I haven't even told you where we're going today on the program. We just had to dive right into it with Dr. Joseph Panbera. So we'll take a break. We'll catch a breath. And then when we come back on the next hour, I'm going to set the remainder of the day up, because there's so much stuff going on. Did you know all of these Russian generals that were offed in Ukraine? And I don't know why we'd be talking about this, but this was all done with American intelligence. They're admitting it now. This was American G2 that helped the Ukrainians off all of these very important Russian generals. I'm sure that makes Vladimir Putin oh so freaking happy. This is KMJ.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone's senior writer, Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.